Looking for a new job or recruiting new talent? Kickstart your search on recruitireland.com, where people make better connections. Job seekers, find your perfect match with in-depth company profiles and handy career advice. Recruiters, advertise your jobs and showcase your company across Ireland's trusted media network. Recruitireland.com. Jump on to take off.
Hello, my name is Irene Feehan, and you're very welcome to Growing Pains, the Irish Examiner's parenting podcast series. With me today is child psychotherapist Dr. Joanna Fortune, who writes a column for our IE parenting section, out every Tuesday and online. Joanna is the author of numerous books, including the 15-minute parenting series. Thank you for joining us in our studio today, Joanna.
It's lovely to be here, Irene.
For the next 20 minutes, we'll be talking about building friendships during the teenage years. The World Health Organization has declared loneliness as a global public health concern. Friendships are key to how young people socialize and connect. But what happens if your teenager is finding it difficult to make friends? So, Joanna, why would you say peer relationships are crucial to teens?
Oh, so many reasons. And I think, you know, feeling understood and accepted and socially fitting in is of great importance to teenagers. And at this stage, they really feel that this need can only be met by their peers. You know, friendships at this age are really providing a great sense of reassurance, emotional support, and they can also serve as a protective factor in terms of mental health. It's really developmentally normal and healthy for teenagers to prioritize their peer relationships above family relationships at this stage. That's really where their main focus is. It's part of that developmental task of adolescents to pull away from depending on parents towards greater independence and autonomy. They spend more time with their friends. They tend to feel better understood at this stage of development by their friends than they do by us parents. So there's a whole lot that's going on with them. But really, when we think about how those adjustments in adolescence are being negotiated, you know, they want more privacy from us, so they confide in their friends. They want to look different and establish that they are other than us, so they begin to try and match up with how their friends are dressing, how their friends are looking, what their friends are doing. And really, that's where they're prioritizing activities. So they're less likely to agree to come to a family party for us when they've got an offer to do something with a friend. It really is where their social emotional development is taking place.
And what kind of issues are you seeing in your clinic? Are you hearing from parents around teenagers who are feeling lonely, unable to make connections with friends?
Loneliness is one of the biggest threats to mental well-being that we have at the moment. It's certainly not exclusive to teenagers, but I am seeing a lot of it. Again, increasingly since the global pandemic, since COVID times, when our teenagers were warned, you know, do not go near your friends, stay in your room, just, you know, go on your screens. And now here we are going, get out of your room, get off your screens, have you no friends? It's very difficult for them to make that transition. And I'm seeing much more of it since COVID, I have to say. But what I'm hearing from parents is concern that their teenagers are retreating further and further into their bedrooms or their devices, and that they don't hear about their friends. They don't see them going out with friends. Or sometimes, Irene, they don't approve of the friends their teenager has and they would have chosen other friends for them. But friendship does come up quite a lot in parental concerns.
There is also the influence of social media on their real life relationships, like that idea they're always on. What's the impact of that?
I mean, I would see some pros and definitely some cons with social media. No matter what we all think about it, it is absolutely pervasive in teenagers' lives. They all have devices, they are all on social media, and they are all on all the time. And I think, look, social media can connect teenagers with like-minded kids, especially if you have a teenager who isn't fitting in with their typical peer group in school or just sees themselves on the fringe or on the outside, that they can find like-minded kids online and they can feel that sense of connections. It can help them find a community that they feel they fit into. But, and oh, but, but social media can also really prevent any distance in friendships. Like, I feel if your teenager is in school with their friends all day, and then they come home and they're in communication with them on social media all evening into the nighttime, and then the first thing before they even get to school in the morning, they're in touch with their friends. Like all of us with our friendships, even as adults, we know this. What's really nice is you spend time with your friends and then you spend time away from them, and then you really appreciate spending time with them again. Teenagers don't have that. There is no break. So the intensity in their friendships can be immense. And out of that intensity can emerge tension, agitation, rows. And if you have a young person who is experiencing a hard time emotionally in school, and maybe they're being isolated or they're being bullied, then social media can be a nightmare for them because there's no break. School doesn't just end and the day ends and the bullying ends there. It continues in those devices in their pockets. So in lots of ways, social media, while there are some benefits, there are also quite a lot of concerns with how it's affecting or influencing young people's peer interactions.
And there's also that difficulty when you're on social media, you're not getting those social cues.
No, you're not at all.
You're not getting that feedback.
No, because I mean, you're not locking eyes with anybody. You're not moving your lips. I'm not getting to read your facial muscles. I'm not getting to discern from your tone of voice, the pitch, the pace you're using. I'm not able to discern any extra meaning in what you're saying. It is just communicated as is. So actually my capacity to pick up on verbal and nonverbal communication, to read body language in general, is really interrupted by this.
Can I ask you about the impact of COVID then on those, I'm talking about children, maybe early teenage years as well, who missed out on those crucial years, transition from primary to secondary school, how they have more ground to make up now?
Oh, significantly, because if you think about when they come out of middle childhood and they've been beginning to lean into their peer group more and more, it's really so in adolescence that that is their emotional world. If you were 12-ish going into COVID restrictions, you really didn't, or even 11, you know, you didn't get those opportunities. And then you didn't get that peer group consolidation and strengthening and enhancing that happens. And all of a sudden you're going in at 14, 15, and a lot of your development has been short-circuited there. And so, and I know teachers I've spoken to would verify this as well, that they found like building cohesion and connection in the kids in school took time because they'd also been going to school through devices. And, you know, we give our kids a lot of mixed messages about devices. We're like, oh, take that now and occupy yourself, or, you know, do your homework on that or look it up. Oh, get off that and don't be on it. I think actually kids got a lot of mixed messages about hang out together, don't hang out together, be together, do not be together. Why aren't you all being super friends with each other? I think we asked way too much, and I think we didn't understand how unfair. And I understand, look, from a health perspective, what was going on. I'm not talking about that. But socially, how unfair that was to teenagers.
And the cost to teenagers.
Oh, it's huge. We're still seeing it. We're still seeing it play out. And I know parents are as well, because I hear from them. I hear about their concerns about all of this, and about friendship, I think, is, you know, we see higher levels of anxiety as well. But friendship is one that we're really seeing it play out in.
What about the children who rely on gaming and make friends through games? I mean, can you call them real friends?
I mean, in lots of ways, I'm going to contradict myself now. I'm going to say, yes, these can be real friends, so long as you know this is not the real world.
And big difference.
I think that's the difference here, because actually I can have a really good online pal, but unless it's somebody I know in the real world, I don't know who that person is. I wouldn't know them if I met them on the street, and I don't even know if they are who they say they are. But in that game, in that world, I feel a good connection to that person. So, I mean, lots of kids will have, you know, a play partner online, somebody that they feel, oh yeah, I really like their skills, it aligns with mine, and we play well together. But I really feel strongly that they cannot be your child's only friends or only connections. Just, Irene, as they can't be our only connections as adults. We need real life, interpersonal, face-to-face interactions, because that's where the social emotional growth and development takes place. So I wouldn't get into it telling kids their friends aren't real, but I would be reminding them, okay, those are your online friends. Now, what about your friends in the real world? They do need that balance.
I'm wondering about playing with kids from your class, for example. I often hear my own children saying, oh, I'm playing with ABC from my class, and they'll pick it up. They'll have a chat in school about it the next day, and they'll pick it up that evening, hopefully after homework. So would you, that's something you'd recommend or say support?
Look, I think children, especially when they're in that middle childhood stage, they do love to play with gaming and devices. It's a language they all speak. It's a way of connecting. I think if you're happy for your child to be on a device like that, then if they're playing with kids they know, that's definitely better than playing with kids they don't know. Be aware, though, in some of these games, you take on personas and roles, and actually tension can occur in those games. If you've been building something up in, you know, be it Minecraft or Roblox, and then I decide I'm going to blow it up or destroy it on you, maybe what continues into school the next day is online tension. So just as we do with role play with kids, that when we're in role, we de-role at the end. Now we're not superheroes anymore. Now we can't fly. Now we're just us walking to the kitchen for dinner or whatever it might be. I think we also have to do a bit of that with the online and say we leave that online and we don't bring that into school because it can cause rows. I'm very aware of that.
And how would parents help the child transition from the online world then back into the real world?
I think it's about giving them a visual countdown. I'm not a huge fan of, you know, just saying 10 more minutes, because when they're really stimulated in that game, they're saying, yeah, 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 but it doesn't mean anything. And if you set an alarm on your phone to go beep, beep, it happens, then the time is gone before they realize it. I like a big sand timer. You can get them with 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever it is, and turning it in your child, you know, their line of vision.
So it's a visual cue.
And saying when the sand hits the bottom, the device goes off, and then being with them at the end and just facilitating that transition. I know you'd love to play some more, but you're going to get to play tomorrow. Can you come and help me find something in the back of the press? I'm looking for two tins of beans and I can only see one. Will you root around in there and find that? Will you do for me? Give them a little job, a very practical task that structures getting them out of that virtual stimulation back into the real world.
So it's like they need to transition between the two
worlds. It really
is.
And I think that's easier with our sort of middle childhood age kids. Teenagers, you have to, you know, the sand timer, whatever, they're going to roll their eyes at you and be that much more cynical response. But I think you're also trying to hold boundaries on that and give them a practical task. Okay, I really need this done at this time. And you're coming in and you're giving them the, with your hand holding up five fingers, four fingers, three, and not coming in every minute, but just giving them the, hey, that needs to go off soon. Because with teenagers, I find the because is important. So you're not just saying, because I said so. You're saying you've been on that for an hour. There are three other things that have to happen in our house tonight. You've got to get your homework done. We've got to get the dinner ready and we've got to sit down and eat. Come off that now so we can get those three things done.
So they have a context for the finishing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Have you come across gender differences in terms of how children are dealing with loneliness?
I think I do see some gendered differences. I think, you know, in adolescence, again, this is a stereotype, but maybe it's a stereotype for a reason. I'm just going to put it out there. Female friendships tend to be quite intimate, very intense. They share a lot with each other. It's a lot of sitting, talking, confiding, being with each other. And of course, they have activities and sports that they do and have friends in those areas as well. Boys connect more through doing. You know, what do we have in common? My friends from sports, what do you do when you're together? We play football or we play whatever it is. You know, it tends to be more that way. They don't open up about their feelings as much. Now, again, if we were having this conversation even just 5 years ago, I really think I would be saying, and that's what I see all the time. I do see a change, and I think it's a welcome change across any gender identity, that I do see an increase in young people emotionally leaning into each other more than they have done. Now, I'm sure there are people listening going, that is not my experience. And I've had plenty of that in my clinic as well. But in, generally speaking, I do see less of that very clear demarcation between how genders interact with friends.
Why do you think that's shifting then, that they're more likely to meet in the middle?
I think it's the benefits trickling down from being more open about mental health conversations, about encouraging young men to speak about their feelings. I think we're less gendered in how we boys don't cry, and this is, you know, the kind of the tropes that used to be thrown out there. I think those have quite rightly been challenged. And I do see boys having more of that close emotional connection with their male friends. And I also see children from all genders friendly with each other, and that you really can be just friends. And this is my friend. I think that the current, you know, teenage age group are less bothered about that than maybe we were. Now, look, again, I'm very aware when I say things like this in a context here, that's a generalization, and there will definitely be exceptions to that. But I, you know, when I work with young, teenage boys in my clinic now, and often I'm talking about friends and who do you talk to, I've moved from, say, 5-10 years ago from hearing nobody, I wouldn't talk to my friends about that, too. Well, I have two friends I would say that to, or one guy that I feel I could really talk to about that. I see that. Now, that's a very anecdotal example, but I'm seeing it enough for it to strike me as a change.
So I'm thinking about all the social media campaigns about sports stars talking about their mental health, coming up and being much more frank, autobiographies, my story. So they've actually done a lot to destigmatize.
I think we're seeing the impact of that. And I think it's a positive thing for sure. And I think we should encourage our children, regardless of their gender identity, to make sure that they know that they deserve, not they need, but they deserve friends who are there to listen and support. But I also think we want to talk to our teenagers in their friendships about the importance of reciprocity. And healthy relationships have high levels of reciprocity. So in our adult lives, if that's you and your partner, it will be that your partner can support you and step up and be there for you when you're in need, because they know when they're in need, they can anticipate with certainty that you would give back to them. Healthy relationships have that. And that doesn't just start when, you know, we're in intimate partner relationships. That starts much, much earlier. So I think it's okay to talk to our teenagers. And I think it's important. This is a conversation that comes up a lot for me in my clinical work about, if you are the friend who's always confiding in the group or in your friend, if you're putting a lot on them, what might that be like for your friend? And if you are the one who is the group confidant, who is like the group's therapist, you know, everybody puts their problems and worries and secrets into you, then actually I think we have to talk about, is that a healthy friendship for you to be in? Because healthy friendships have give and take. You're not always the one receiving the problems, nor are you always the one sharing the problems. It has to be, I'm having a tough time and my friend will support me, because I know when my friend's having a tough time, I will support them.
So there's an empathy there as well.
There really is.
And a sense of responsibility in relationship as well.
And perspective taking.
I'm wondering what advice you could give to parents about what interventions they can make. Their child is finding it difficult to make friends, spending a lot of time with them by themselves. What can parents do?
Well, I mean, just because young people's lean, their important hub of social development is their friends, they still need help and support to build and maintain positive, supportive friendships from us parents. They still need our support. I think be interested in your teen's life. You know, it really teaches them they're interesting, and that includes being interested in their friends. Not interrogating them, not prying, and being interested does not mean being intrusive. We have to respect that developmentally they need more privacy from us, and we don't want to cross that line. I think, you know, I would say no matter who your child's friends are, even if you're a bit, I'm not sure I approve, invite them over. Make sure that your child knows they can bring their friends to your house and that their friends are welcome there. That is an opportunity for you to see and observe your child with their friends, what they're like together, and to get to know those kids and to really say, well, do you know what? I'd rather you be here together in my house than hanging around somewhere else. I think that's really important. I think, you know, what we know, Irene, is that a strong parent-teen relationship is a great predictor for positive teenage friendships. And that starts in early childhood. It's not just teenagers, but it is a strong predictor. So trying to be and stay non-judgmental, being open to the choices of our teenagers in how they make decisions and supporting them as they work through the consequences or fallout of those decisions, even if and especially if they haven't worked out, is really, really important. And I think also practicing what we preach, that we listen to what they say verbally and we observe what they're saying non-verbally. I think that's essential as well. Those are the kinds of really practical interventions that we can make.
So what would the top tip be if parents did one thing for their child?
I actually think parents who have active and engaged friendships of their own tend to have teenagers who make more positive and healthy friendships for themselves. So allow your teenager to see you reach out, support, talk positively about your friends, be enthused about seeing your friends. Let them see you nurture your own friendships because you're modelling pro-social skills. I think that's a very practical thing you could do.
Thank you for listening. Tune in next Tuesday when I'll be talking to Coleman Nochter about the epidemic of loneliness among young people.